Thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. If you're listening for the first time, welcome, and we're so happy you're here. If you're a returning listener, welcome back, and thank you again for joining us. As with the prior weeks, we will be again looking at the lectionary texts assigned for this week, the week of June 26th. And the lectionary texts, as I've mentioned before, are divided into readings from the Old Testament, the Psalms, the New Testament, and the Gospels. This episode is split into two parts, and in this first part, we'll be talking about the Old Testament reading from 1 Kings, and then the other reading is from Psalm 16. Now, in the reading from 1 Kings, we see Elisha being called by the prophet Elijah. And whenever I read call stories in the Bible, I always tend to think of my own call story. When you're a pastor, people ask you that a lot. How did you decide to go to seminary? What's your call story? You know, they often wonder if it's some big dramatic event. And I never actually planned on going to seminary, and I tried to ignore that call for a long time. So when people ask me about my call, I always wish I have a more dramatic story with some exact defining moment where I said, oh wait, I'm supposed to go to seminary. Instead, there were a lot of little moments, and maybe they would have been more defining if I hadn't been so stubborn, because I tried to ignore it for a long time until God became so persistent that I just couldn't ignore that call anymore. It turns out that, you know, I have a friend who says that God was calling, but he was just letting it go to voicemail. And it turns out that God is not content to play phone tag and leave voicemails. So when God calls, eventually you're going to have to answer. And eventually I did. I stopped being stubborn. I stopped saying, no, no, God, that's not for me. Thanks anyway. And decided to go to seminary. So it doesn't make for a really dramatic call story, but I imagine that it's probably more typical than we might think of trying to talk God out of things that God wants us to do. But I'm excited to get started with you today. But first we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about this week's text from 1 Kings.
Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. The first text, as I said before the break, that we'll be talking about this morning is from the 19th chapter of 1 Kings, verses 15 and 16 and 19 through 21. Then the Lord said to Elijah, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael as king over Aram. Also you shall anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel, and you shall anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, as prophet in your place." So he set out from there, and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, who was plowing. There were 12 yoke of oxen ahead of him, and he was with the 12th. Elisha passed by him, and threw his mantle over him. He left the oxen, ran after Elijah, and said, "Let me kiss my father and mother, and then I will follow you." Then Elijah said to him, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" Elisha returned from following him, took the yoke of oxen, and slaughtered them. Using the equipment from the oxen, he boiled their flesh and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out and followed Elijah and became his servant. Now, a quick side note before I jump into the text for this reading. It's a quick side note about pronunciation, because there are some crazy names in this first lesson for this week. And I know a lot of people don't like reading the Bible out loud because of words like these that they aren't sure how to pronounce and they don't want to stumble over them. And it can be a little awkward to listen to someone who is having trouble pronouncing words. And so I understand when people don't want to be that awkward person reading in front of someone else when they don't know how to pronounce something. But I had a professor in seminary who used to say, just pronounce those words with confidence, because pretty much no one else knows how to say them either. And so if you stumble over them, people will notice. But if you just read them like you know what you're talking about, people will either not notice, they'll just, you know, be in the moment and listen to the words, or they'll think, oh, hey, that's how you pronounce that. So just go into it with confidence, pretend what you know, or pretend you know what you're talking about, fake it until you make it. That's my side note for today. We're going to move on to the actual text now. It is easy to get lost in all the names of the first few verses of this text and miss the fact that there is a shift in power happening here, both politically and prophetically. New kings are being anointed, but Elisha is also being anointed to replace Elijah as prophet. And I'm going to do my best to pronounce Elisha and Elijah so that you can tell the difference, but they have very similar names, so bear with me. And names actually typically mean something in the Bible, so it's always interesting, at least to me, to know the meaning behind names. And in this case, Elisha means God is salvation. With a name like that, you know Elisha is going to have a role to play in this story. We also learn more about Elisha than we might think from this very brief description. When Elijah finds Elisha, he is plowing with a 12 yoke of oxen, which means there were 24 oxen. So Elisha was very likely from a well-off family. This simple description gives us a picture of the life that Elisha was giving up in order to follow Elijah and live the life that he was being called to. He gives up a life of comfort and familiarity for the unknown life of following the prophet Elijah. One thing I find interesting about this passage is that Elijah doesn't even speak to Elisha at first. He simply just goes by him and throws his mantle on him. And I always like to try to picture scenes like this, and this one is definitely a little bizarre. So think how you might feel if you were out doing a day's work when a complete stranger passes by and throws a mantle on you, which is an article of clothing. Don't think of a mantle like on a fireplace. Think of more like a mantle like a shawl or something. So complete stranger throws this mantle on you, and Elisha somehow knows what this means and the implications it has for his life. I, on the other hand, if I'm putting myself in this story, probably would have just stood there with my mouth hanging open. Hey, dude, you dropped this thing on me, so what's the deal? Which is probably reason number 8,362 why I'm never going to be called as an Old Testament prophet. Elisha doesn't hesitate, though. He realizes that Elijah is asking, and only requests that he be able to go kiss his father and mother before he leaves. And when you read through it, Elijah's answer seems a little bit strange. He says, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" Now, as I was reading commentary on this text for this week, I read a commentary by Stephen Reed of Baylor University, and he writes that this statement can actually be interpreted in two different ways depending on the Hebrew translation. I didn't take Hebrew in seminary, so I have to rely on other people who are much smarter than I am, and I'm very grateful that other people did take Hebrew. So he describes this Hebrew translation, and one way of translating it is that Elijah says, "Go because what I have done to you." And the other way to read it is as, "Go, but remember what I have done to you." Either way, the passage underlines the irrevocability of this call. The last part of this passage, then, is about service. Elijah gives permission to Elisha to go and take leave of his parents, to say goodbye, because his life is now about service. And the first thing that Elisha does after he goes and kisses his parents goodbye is he breaks up the wood yokes and makes a fire, the wood yokes that he was using with the oxen. And then he slaughters the oxen and boils their meat over that fire that he's built. But this is more than just like a farewell barbecue kind of party. These are the artifacts of his previous life. And now they're being given over to the feeding of his family and friends. So it's a symbolic action. He's taking these artifacts, these symbols of his previous life, this life of comfort, this life of familiarity, and he's doing an act of service to his family and his friends. The symbols of his past life are consumed, and Elisha serves his family and friends. And this is a transition point for Elisha because he knows that he is going to be a servant in Elijah's service, but also a servant as a prophet of God. And I think what I personally take from these stories, I think I take a couple of things from this story in particular. First, God's call can come at unexpected times and in unexpected ways. It's a pretty safe bet that when Elisha woke up that morning and went out to plow, he wasn't figuring that he would be called into service by Elijah the prophet and asked to leave his family and everything that he knew prior to that point. God's calls aren't always what we expect, and they often ask us to step out of our comfort zone. Elisha gives up his livestock and what was probably a fairly comfortable life in order to go to a completely new life. God's calls, like I said, aren't always what we expect. And Elisha is a good example because he immediately accepts that call and follows Elijah. Whereas I think a lot of us would be more like a lot of the other Old Testament prophets who try to argue with God, who try to talk God out of what God is asking them to do. For instance, my own call story, while not dramatic, is definitely indicative of a lot of people's stubbornness. At least my own stubbornness, where I said, no, this isn't for me. I don't think you know what you're talking about. Maybe go find someone else. Maybe call someone who's smarter. Maybe call someone who's more faithful. Maybe call someone who's just more than I am. God's calls come in unexpected ways at unexpected times, and they might not be what we thought our life was going to be. And so we fight against that because we have this image in our head of what our life is going to be. And then God's call comes and we say, God, I don't know. I just don't think that that's for me, but thanks. Thanks for asking. And when I think about this, it reminds me that there are people like Elisha who show us the model of saying, okay, God, I trust you. I'm going to take up this mantle, I'm going to go with Elijah, and I'm going to do your service. And that's a really good example for the rest of us who don't always have that immediate reaction, who don't always say, here I am, God, go ahead, use me as you will. And, you know, it's fine to have doubts and it's fine to have questions, but it's also really good to have these examples that show us one way. It's also good to have the other examples of the people who argue with God and then end up doing what God has called them to do anyway. But we have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more about this text from 1 Kings, and then we'll also be moving on to Psalm 16. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we were talking about the text from 1 Kings, the story of Elisha being called by Elijah. We were talking about how God's calls aren't always what we expect, and they often ask us to step out of our comfort zones. We were at the point where Elijah had just slaughtered his oxen and done an act of service by feeding them to his family and friends. Elisha gives up his livestock and what was probably his fairly comfortable, at least it was familiar, life in order to go and live this completely new life. And while our own calls might not ever be this dramatic, they can certainly alter the path that we thought we were on. God's calls can come and say, you were headed this direction, but I think you'll be better suited if you go over here. And one of my favorite prayers from one of the Lutheran books of worship is this one. It says, it's a prayer that goes, "You have called your servants to ventures of which we cannot see the ending, by paths as yet untrodden, through perils unknown. Give us faith to go out with good courage, not knowing where we go, but only that your hand is leading us and your love supporting us." I love this prayer because it does speak to those uncertain moments. It speaks to the fact that God calls us in ways that we don't always understand. It's those paths untrodden. It's through perils that we don't know because we don't know what to expect. And so we're asking God to go with us, to give us courage, and to know that God is leading us, that God is supporting us no matter what. As a child, I thought my life would go in a very set direction. I would go to college. I would become an elementary school teacher. At college, I would meet someone and get married and have several, possibly many, children. I didn't know how many. I thought maybe for a while I wanted a really big family. I would be a working mom and I would be awesome at everything. So it was kind of a vague but kind of specific plan at the same time. College, teacher, marriage, kids. And my childhood plan didn't work out exactly the way I thought. And God's call is still leading me to places that I never expected to go. I mean, I never expected to go to seminary, but I also never expected to live in as many places as I've lived. I never expected to meet the people that I've met, to interact with the people that I've met, to have the experiences that I've had. And there was nothing wrong with my childhood plan, and it would have been a perfectly fine life had it gone that direction, but God led me in new ways. And so I take comfort in this prayer that reminds me that God is with me no matter what. It reminds me that I will be loved and supported and led because God is with me and because God loves me. Elisha might not have known where his call to prophecy was leading him, but with a name like God is Salvation, he really had a built-in reminder that God is always present and always leading us. I'm kind of new to Twitter, but I've been working on Twitter, especially with the podcasts that I'm hosting. And so I follow the Pope on Twitter. Do you think the Pope actually does his own tweets? Because I don't think the Pope does his own tweets, especially not in the various language that the Pope tweets in. But hey, it says it's the Pope, and so I'm just going to go with it, okay? So I follow the Pope on Twitter. And one of his recent tweets jumped out at me in relation to our calls, in relation to my thoughts on these texts for this week. He wrote, "Today the Lord repeats to all pastors, follow me despite the difficulties. Follow me by proclaiming the gospel to all." And I think this applies not just to pastors in terms of ordained ministers, but ministers in the terms of the entire community, all of the believers, the ministry of all believers. Follow me, God says, despite the difficulties. Follow me by proclaiming the gospel to all. God calls all of us, not just pastors, not just missionaries, not just nuns or priests, etc. God calls all of us to do God's work in the world. And that call can at times be difficult, but we are called to share the good news with those we meet, whether that's in word or deed, whether we are actually talking to others about our faith, about our experiences with God, or whether our actions just show that we are a child of God, whether our actions show God's love to the world. And I think that this is actually a really good place to segue into the next text for this week, because while the psalm doesn't specifically make reference to a call story, it does seem like the framework of a prayer surrounding what it means to be called. And so our next text for this week is Psalm 16. "Protect me, O God, for in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. As for the holy ones in the land, they are the noble, in whom is all my delight. Those who choose another god multiply their sorrows. Their drink offerings of blood I will not pour out or take their names upon my lips. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. I have a goodly heritage. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also my heart instructs me. I keep the Lord always before me because he is at my right hand. I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad and my soul rejoices. My body also rests secure, for you do not give me up to Sheol or let your faithful one see the pit. You show me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. In your right hand are pleasures evermore. This psalm jumps right in with a prayer request for protection, because the psalmist recognizes that God is where he can take refuge. And again, as I was reading commentaries for this week, one that I read was by Jin H. Hahn of the New York Theological Seminary. And he writes, "The psalmist, who will turn to none but God, presents his petition for protection." Literally, protection is "keep me" in that first verse. In Hebrew, in the Hebrew Bible, the word "keep" almost always comes with God as the subject when the object in the verb is a human being. So keep me. God is always the subject when someone as a human is saying keep. Counting on that which God is well known for doing, the psalmist asks God to shield him. And I appreciate this take on the idea of protection because it seems more personal. We appeal to God for protection for any number of reasons, because we know that God is always present, always in relationship. And to me, to be kept feels like being kept in that relationship, being kept within the shelter of God's love. Protection implies danger of some sort, but our relationship with God means we are kept in the midst of everything. God keeps us in the midst of sorrow, fear, joy, contentment, and the entire range of human emotions. We are being kept in God's relationship, in God's love for us. And this commentary has made me think about this psalm and other psalms of protection in a new and deeper way, because asking to be kept by God means asking to be in relationship with God and knowing that God will keep us through all of the emotions of our lives, through all of the phases of the journeys of our lives. "Keep me, God," might become my new popcorn prayer. I don't know if there's another definition of popcorn prayer, but for me, the popcorn prayers are the ones that I just pop out to God when I don't have the time or the energy or whatever for something longer or more thought out, you know, for a deeper conversation. It's just things that I throw out there like "thank you" or "help me" or now "keep me, God." I think "keep me, God" is a prayer of petition in that I'm asking God to protect me and watch over me. But it's also a reminder to me, reminding me that no matter what else might be going on in my life or in the world around me, I am kept by a loving God. And we're going to take another quick break, but when we come back, we're going to continue talking about Psalm 16. We're going to continue talking about what it means to be kept by God. We'll talk about what this psalm means in our lives. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's GSMCpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we were talking about Psalm 16 and what it means to be kept by God, what it means to ask God for protection. And this prayer, this "protect me, O God," or "keep me, O God," is followed by a declaration of trust. So the psalmist starts out with a petition, with a request, but follows it up with a declaration of trust. "You are my Lord. I have no good apart from you." And in light of what it means to be kept, I think this is a perfectly logical follow-up statement for the first verse. It acknowledges the one to whom the psalmist is praying and acknowledges the depth of that relationship and how it affects the psalmist's life. And he then goes on to notice how even his relationships are affected by this being kept by God, those to whom he refers to as holy ones. And holy ones may other places in the Bible refer to angels or other divine beings, But here in verse 3, they are in the land, which seems to make it clear that the psalmist is referring to the community of faithful people, the people around him. And he calls these holy ones noble, not because their status comes from wealth or prestige or privilege or reputation, but their status as holy ones, their status as noble, lies solely in their dedication to God. Their commitment brings the psalmist joy. So he's surrounded by these ones that he calls the holy ones. He's surrounded by this community of faith, and he gives thanks for that community of faith. He gives thanks that they also are dedicated to God as he is dedicated to God. You can see that he takes comfort in this community. And I think this is another way that we are kept by God. We're in relationship with God, but we're also in relationship with each other. And so when we have this community surrounding us, also being loved and supported by God, then it gives us an even better basis and foundation for our lives. But in contrast to the ones that the psalmist calls the holy ones, he places those holy ones in sharp contrast to those who are eager to choose another god, as he says. These others not only bring pain upon themselves, but they can also cause harm to others, as implied in the image of their drink offerings of blood, which, ew. But these are not good people in the eyes of the psalmist, and he sees their sorrows multiplying because they turn to false gods rather than the one who will keep them. In verse 6, the psalmist regards the Lord as his inheritance, something that was handed down to him and which he in turn will hand down his faith to later generations. He describes what he has received as something that is fallen to him, acknowledging that it came to him as a gift of grace and that he could neither claim credit for it nor take it for granted. And so he's building this whole picture of his relationship with God. He starts out by saying, "Keep me, O God," but then he lists all the reasons that he trusts God, all the reasons that he knows that he can say to God, "Protect me, God, keep me, God. I have faith in you, I have trust in you." And he knows that he's better off when he puts his protection in God because he looks at the people around him. And the holy ones, the ones that are dedicated to God, he sees their life of faith. And the other ones who are dedicated to other things, who have put their trust in the things of the world or things other than God, he sees that they are sorrowful, that they hurt themselves and they hurt others. And so he knows that to be in relationship with God doesn't make your life perfect necessarily, but it does give you that foundation. You know that God is with you no matter what. You are being kept in relationship with God no matter what. And so you've got that firm foundation that others might not have or feel. And the psalmist will stay with the Lord instead of being moved. Literally, the Hebrew translates as "will not totter," which is great. You know, you kind of think of weevils, they wobble, but they don't fall down. But the psalmist is saying he will not be moved. He's confident that this is the formula for security as well as for happiness. And this is in verse 9, and this verse contains a catalog of organs that often symbolize the center or the entirety of one's being, constructing a picture of joy that permeates his body and his soul, this happiness that permeates not just his mind, but his heart and all of these centers of his being. The psalmist trusts that God will deliver him from death. That's in verse 10. And he anticipates that God will show him the path of life. If you look to the New Testament in the story of Pentecost, that's in the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 2, verse 27 and some surrounding specifically, you see that Peter references verse 10 of this psalm and paraphrases many of the themes present in this psalm. So if you want to go look that up later, Acts 2, read the story of Pentecost, and you can compare it with this psalm, you'll see a lot of similar themes. And it's not hard to figure out why, because Peter, in the story of Pentecost, is talking to a crowd about Jesus' death and resurrection and the promises of God. And here in this psalm, we see a psalm that describes being in relationship with that God who makes promises to us, and how that relationship affects our relationships and the paths that our lives take. I'm not sure that I've ever really paid much attention to this psalm before. I know I've read it, I know I've heard it, but it might become one of my new favorites because of this idea of being kept, of being in protection by God. I really appreciate how it sums up our relationship with God. And I love how passionate the psalmist is in describing that relationship and his reaction to it. In the first text for this week, we discussed the call of Elisha. And I feel like this psalm is a good pairing with that text because it gives a prayer and a way of rejoicing in that call, whatever form it might take. You can imagine Elisha maybe saying something similar when he went with Elijah. He said, "Yes, I will go with you. I will be in service to you and to God. I will do what God calls me to do." But you can imagine that maybe Elijah was saying, "Protect me, O God. Keep me, O God. I put my trust in you. I understand that you are calling me, that you are leading me, and so I put my trust knowing that everything good in my life comes from you. I put my trust in you knowing that you aren't going to lead me down a path, that you're not going to lead me down the wrong path." And so I like that this psalm could be a prayer for those of us who are thinking about our calls, or just thinking about our lives in general as we ask God to keep us. Keep me, O God. And it gives the psalmist this exuberance, this spiritual joy. And so I'm wondering, what are the aspects of your spiritual life that give you the most joy? What are the things in your relationship with God that give you the most joy, the most contentment? Where do you see most clearly how your relationship with God has directed your paths in life? I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can actually hit me up on Twitter if you want at GSMC_Bible Study. You can share your experiences, your thoughts on how you've been called, how you see God working in your life, where you see God leading you. Again, that's at GSMC_Bible Study on Twitter. And that's actually all the time that we have for this episode. So thank you for joining me as we discuss the readings from 1 Kings and Psalm 16 that were assigned for this week of June 26th, 2016. Remember that you can find all of the Golden State Media Concepts podcast at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download all of our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. We're all over. So thank you for joining me again this week, and remember that you are a beloved child of God.